You're doing all the right things, like eating clean and staying active, but nearly all of us are still missing a key piece, minerals. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's not getting, supporting mood, energy, immunity, and nervous system balance. It's made from ionic trace minerals your body actually absorbs and comes in three delicious flavors, blue raspberry, blue Hawaiian, and blue acai. Because your body can't make minerals and modern food and water don't supply enough, start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Find it now at TraceMinerals.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 791.IS4209. Certificate number 23054. Minitel.
Minitel!
Is that a thing I should say with an accent? Minitel. It seems like a word that should be said with an accent.
It is not only, you're correct, it's not only French, but it's a French acronym.
Really? Minitel.
The best kind of acronym.
Mini, meaning small. Tel, meaning telephone.
The funny thing is, Minitel was actually not the name of the service we're going to be discussing. It's actually called Teletel, which is even funnier.
That's so French.
From the Greek tele, meaning far, and tele, meaning far.
Far, far.
Yeah, it was Farfing Newton.
That's my least favorite Star Wars character.
That's my preferred distance to be from Jar Jar Binks.
Far, far.
I like to be when he's stepping in Bantha poop. I want to be far, far.
So how did it go from mini, mini to Minitel?
Minitel was the device. Teletel was the service. This is all, we've talked about the origins of the internet before on this show a couple times.
Because we
remember the early days well enough to, and we're the last generation that can remember the before times.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
the last generation to come of age in a dial-up world, you know?
Our parents and even my older brothers and sisters, even the young boomers, probably were introduced to the internet after it became clear that there wasn't another option except, you know, either get on Facebook or you'll never talk to your grandkids.
They got their 90th AOL CD in the mail and they thought, fine.
Right.
You've won me over.
Whereas you were there at the dawn, but you're not a digital native. You saw it happen as an adult.
I remember living in a household with no home computer. I remember living in a household with a home computer, but no internet or no modem. I remember living in a household with a home computer and dial-up internet. And I've hit for the cycle, and I've lived in a high-speed internet world too.
So how
broadband?
Let's just to get this out of the way. What is the oldest person? No. What is the youngest person who would have been born into a house with no computer?
I mean, it depends on what your formative times are. I mean, adolescence is really...
And also your wealth, right? There are going to be people that didn't have computers.
And part of the world. But yeah, I just mean in general, like, are you asking... Because today, the internet has poisoned so much of modern childhood that kids will literally try to pinch swipe on magazine covers to try to get the size bigger.
I do that.
Okay, you might be the oldest person without dementia who does that.
So terrible. I'll be reading a magazine and I'm like, what is that? And I go to make it bigger.
You should not be worried about doing that. You should be worried if it actually gets bigger.
Oh, right.
That's the thing they say about, Like if you don't know where your keys are, that's not Alzheimer's. If you don't know what your keys are, that might be Alzheimer's.
My daughter got brand new glasses yesterday. First, you know, she had glasses.
Mazel tov, by the way.
Thank you. We got her brand new ones because her prescription had changed. And it was the first time she ever had new glasses. You know, the first time you have glasses, you're like, wow, glasses. But to get new ones with a better prescription, and she put them on and she was like, whoa.
Like a VR helmet.
Yeah, she was like, well, things over there look blurry. And when I first put them on, my eyes didn't know what to do. And she's like, I feel cross-eyed. And I was like, welcome to new glasses. It's a whole new world for you.
Welcome to psychotropic drugs. This is exactly what a lot of it's going to be.
Oh, also,
like.
I dosed you.
Yeah, the glasses have been microdosed. So this is a story about the origins of the internet, but not adjacent to anything we've discussed before.
Oh, a whole separate pocket.
This is like a parallel universe.
Okay, I like those.
Where people eat dinner at 11, and it's usually mussels and white wine vinegar or white wine sauce, and they've got their own internet.
Is this an alternate universe where Han Solo was played by a young Rob Lowe?
This is a French alternate universe, so it's... Oh. I don't
know.
He's
portrayed by Gerard Depardieu.
Exactly right. No, Gerard Depardieu is Jabba the Hutt in this scenario.
Oh. I'd like it better.
I was reading one of Patricia Highsmith's 5 Ripley novels. You know, they made the first Mr. Ripley movie about him, but she wrote a whole series. And I guess the first 3 in particular are really held as just classics of the suspense genre because they work as thrillers, but it's also got this fascinating sociopathic, apparently queer protagonist. You know, it's really kind of a step forward from whatever your dad's suspense novel is. Jack Reacher. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. John le Carré is also a very forward-thinking spy writer, but... Yeah. But, you know, Patricia Highsmith was a closeted lesbian writer, an American overseas. It's a very different take than what was coming out of a lot of the thriller paperback engine at the time.
So the story is maintained over 5 books.
Yeah, the latter 2, which I have not read yet, are, I think, kind of maybe 90s era's returns, and maybe they're not quite up to the standards.
Yeah.
But,
you never know about that. Maybe read them and you're just like, wow, this is a great book.
I'm going to read them. Plus, I always think, you know what? Better than nothing. Keep churning out the books.
Turn them out.
Make Star Wars prequels. Why?
Don't.
What could go wrong?
Don't do it. Stop. Enough's enough.
But Wrigley, if you've only seen the first movie, he continues wriggling out of things.
Oh, wow.
He continues bashing people on the heads with statuettes or whatever he has handy and narrowly avoiding... Police on 3 continents.
That movie made me really uncomfortable, and I have never had a desire to like revisit it.
Because Jude Law is so good looking in it.
He's very handsome, but no, the whole vibe of the movie from opening credits on, I was like, ugh. And maybe it's that I resemble him too much.
Maybe, just like looking in a mirror.
Maybe I would watch that movie and I was like, well, how do you know so much?
The talented Mr. Roderick.
About my thoughts.
Well, he's an American guy who reinvents himself abroad in the shadow of these more sophisticated people. There's obviously some queer subtext that becomes text at many points. But he's also...
In my own life, too.
Just like you. He's not a good person, and often his adventures in impersonation and context shifting involve bludgeoning people and burying bodies and things like this.
True for me, also.
In the second and third books, he has settled outside Paris in a lovely little French village with some of the money he gets from Jude Law's estate.
That's where our stories differ.
Yeah, you have not set up in a little villa outside, I can't remember where he lives, near Fontainebleau, I think. But there's a scene, and it's kind of a, there's a funny kind of time period thing where the first book is explicitly in the 50s, and the second book is like 6 months later, and now it's 1967. Like, they're all like, put on the new Beatles LP, Tom, you know? And then the next book is like 1 month later in the 70s, you know, like time is shifting with them, like they're a Marvel Comics character or something.
Right. The lead character is 6 months older, but it's 15 years later.
That's exactly what happens. And there's a scene where he's, and so there's a lot of stuff about just what it's like in France in the 70s. the long distance is terrible. It's a recurring theme in the book is how he's always trying to call his contact in Amsterdam and he can't hear. What?
The long distance in France was terrible into the mid-90s.
But we don't want to put down French telecom too much in this particular story, because this story is a triumph of French telecommunications. What were your experiences with European long distance?
Oh, you know, European long distance always involved going into a place. You went up to a desk, you told the person the number you wanted to call, and then you sat in a hard chair, and then at some indeterminate time, they called your name. And
this can't be right.
Yeah, and told you what booth to go in. And then down this hall, there would be a bunch of doors, and there'd be a light over each door, and the light would be on over booth, you know, chambre number 7. You'd go in, and it's like a tiny little dark closet, and there's a phone, and you pick it up.
Is it possible you were in a French prison?
And then on the other end of the line, there's either an international operator, or you wait through a series of clicks and boops, and then your person that you're trying to call is like, hello? You're like, oh, it's, you know, hi, it's me. And you just hope that you don't get disconnected before you tell them the account number or whatever. It was so...
This is where we're going to find out you were some kind of test subject for the French military.
It was so Byzantine. It was like that in Spain up until, I don't know, not that long ago.
Are you saying these socialist Western European democracies have all kinds of crazy bureaucracy and inefficiencies?
Did you ever use a cell phone in Europe in the mid-2000s? It was the same thing. You would cross from Holland to Luxembourg, and all of a sudden your phone, you know, like you'd be on the phone, and you'd cross over a border. And
your friend is now Flemish.
Well, no, now you're spending 10 euros a second
right.
Because it's long distance.
We had been warned in advance, and we were just like, until very recently, we were just like, everybody put your phone in no roaming mode. We are not dealing with this.
Well, no, I had a plastic bag that had like 10 SIM cards, yeah. And you would pull over and switch your SIM cards. But a lot of times, you know, you're right on the border of somewhere, and you're like, I didn't go into Belgium. We're still in Holland.
But, you know, that happens to my parents on the Olympic Peninsula. Like, you stand...
Oh, they get in Canadian.
You move 8 feet across the room, and you're on Rogers Wireless.
I know, Rogers Look Wireless. Out. And why does Rogers Wireless have all caps?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
is that
like,
an acronym, Canada?
What the hell? Why is it all caps? Like, all of our cell phone things have normal caps.
Really, Ontarian?
Rogers.
The.
Anyway, I don't think it's like that anymore, but.
No.
SIM card's in a plastic bag.
I swapped out, Tim. For the first time last year, I was in Europe and I did the thing where you just go buy a.
Burner phone?
$8. No, I kept my phone, but I bought an $8 SIM card and. Oh, yeah. And I was just spoofing Her Majesty's government. She thought I was a British subject, and nope, I had just spent $8 at Vodafone or whatever.
But what does it cost to just stay on AT&T and pay the roaming?
It's the worst.
Oh, really?
They used to have some, that's why I didn't do it. They used to have some, here's $60 for the month, you're on roaming, you don't have much data, but you can text, go with God.
Yeah, right.
And then they got rid of it, and they're like, good news, now all your only option is our daily passport. It was like $10 a day for the privilege of having
those villains
limited data. And it turned out 03 or whatever. 02? What's the name of the British?
02.
02 would give me had a summer deal and would give me a little chip for
$8.
$8. So
I have a shoebox full of all of the burner phones I bought in Europe over the years. Because it ended up being cheaper. You'd go in like, sure. Okay, $40, fine, I'll just buy some.
And when you're selling as much hashish as you were.
Oh.
So Tom Ripley is he's always getting phone calls from all over Europe. And there's a point in the third Ripley book where, and you can tell me if you're familiar with this, he's got a 70s era French phone where he's talking on the phone and his wife takes the second earpiece from the back of the phone and holds it up to her ear to listen in. Are you familiar with these French phones?
I've seen them. I never had the privilege of using one, but I've seen them.
I've seen them in movies a lot. Like it's kind of a common... thriller trope that, you know, if you want to listen in, you'll, or even, you know, even just a, you know, some kind of French drama, some Truffaut movie, you know, somebody will want to listen in and they'll take the little earpiece on the back of the phone. Phones that not only have the regular handheld earpiece, but they have like a little stethoscope thing.
But, you know, we just had another extension. You just go into the other room and pick up the phone and try not to make a clicking sound.
I mean, maybe there was less of a click with. I mean, this is, you really do have to stand just inches away. You can't eavesdrop on the person from your household. This is more like your friend motions you over and says, "Hey, grandma's on the line. Come say happy birthday."
Right.
Grandmère. And I asked my wife who in Paris
in
the 90s. That can't be right, is it? Who lived in Paris in the 90s. And I was like, what was that second earpiece for? Was it like, was it for eavesdropping? And I think her take was that, you know, it was, she had actually seen people just use it as a separate thing. Like,
oh, to get stereo?
You get on the phone and then you have stereo. You have a more immersive conversation.
That seems even weirder.
So this, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't know why that was there. And I encourage all descendants of the French to let us know at Omnibus why French phones have.
Please, descendants of the French. That's also a great Judas Priest record.
Descendants of the French. And she said, why are you asking about that? And I said, well, it's in this Ripley novel. And so we were talking about weird French telephone technology. And she said, well, what about Minitel? I bet he doesn't have Minitel. And I was like, what is Minitel? And she's like, how do you not know about Minitel? And
how I said, do you not know?
And I said, you know, because she had been in France in the right air. And I was like, what is Minitel? And she said, when I lived in France, the French were so proud of Minitel. It was the first thing they would show any new arrival. They would say, you know, in America, you do not have the Minitel. Everybody would have in their apartment a little beige box.
Okay.
That had a...
How big of a beige box?
Well, like, what's the... smaller than this... A little... Like, this, a small laptop. Imagine, okay, like, a Chromebook or a Speak and Spell or something.
Okay. I have a Speak and Spell nearby.
It's got a... Yeah. Bring that out. Let's take a look. It's got a screen, and it's got a little keyboard, and it's an all-text, all-black-and-white interface. And I said, well, what was it? And she said, well, it was like the internet, but it was before the internet.
Okay.
Everybody had their own internet in France in the 1980s. And I said, well, that is not true.
What?
I think we would all know if every Frenchman had his own internet in the 1980s, like fully a decade before, before any American had email, who was not working for the Defense Department or JPL.
So was it just like a translator for closed caption type of thing, except for
essentially
phone?
Yeah, it was a video text service that ran over
video text.
Well, it's video in the sense that you're looking at a screen.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing that you and I would call video. Okay. In fact, it's so text only that if you want graphics to display, you have to use kind of a rudimentary alphabet of lines and shapes, you know, that make polygons available to you.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you know how fonts sometimes have those typefaces, yeah, will have those, here's a corner, here's a left side of the hexagon. It was not state-of-the-art by any standard, except for the standard of the late 1970s, which is when a French government report said that France needs to leap into the future and to put text-based computer services available to every French household over the phone lines, over French Telecom. In fact, wait, sorry, France Telecom didn't even exist yet, over PTT, whatever their old agency was that used to have post office and...
Yeah, right.
So this is like a government report on the post office telegraphs and telegrams. This is before their... I guess they never had a Ma Bell breakup or a Maman Cloche.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, so there's just this one government agency that covers all communications, and they send a report to, I guess, President D'Estaing saying, we are going to invent the internet. And... if you remember, and maybe you don't, maybe this has been kind of memory hold. It kind of came back to me as I looked at this. The late 70s were very much a time of kind of a great leap forward in France.
Yeah, right, right. It's the end of De Gaulle, and it's going to be a new era in France.
And it's not just a political era, but actually a technological era. Like, we are going to be models of building a new futuristic kind of society. This is the time when the high-speed TGV trains.
Right, the Pompidou Center.
It's exactly right. The Pompidou Center opens in, what's that neighborhood of Paris called? Beau something.
Yeah, Beau Regime.
Beau Derek. Opens in Beau Derek.
Beau France.
Which is exactly this kind of utopian socialist vision of the future. It's this amazing, it's the largest modern art collection in Europe with that crazy Rogers piano facade,
mm-hmm,
of, you know, a series of tubes.
Beaubourg.
And it's also got a huge library and a big, you know, a center for music and acoustic research. And, you know, it's all available to everyone in France from high and low.
Super scandalous at the time.
The architecture was, for sure. And this was kind of the forward-looking view in France at the time. The Ariane rocket, you know, the first European kind of unified space attempt to get stuff into orbit comes from this time.
You've got the Concorde.
You've got hovercraft.
No one else has.
People are trying hovercrafts across the channel. And in fact, other kinds of experiment. I mean, the TGV to this day has the world's fastest rail record of, you know, 500 and almost 600 miles an hour, I think.
Do you remember, you're probably just a little too young to remember when the TGV opened and it felt like, wow, what a thing.
I remember hearing about the Channel, which was later, you know, when the Eurostar opened or whatever. But yeah, like, I do remember as a kid reading about bullet trains in Japan and France and just thinking, this exists somewhere?
Yeah.
Like now?
But, you know, the thing about the, what we would have called the TGV, it was orange. Which is a thing that just is such a cool color, and it's such a cool color for a train. And I the first time I rode on it, I was thrilled. It really felt like riding the Concorde. Also, it makes you very dizzy and seasick to be on a train going that fast. Your eye doesn't know what to look at.
Wow.
You've been on a bullet train.
I've been on Shinkansen. I don't know if I've ever been on European high speed. Well, no, I've been on Spanish high speed rail, the AVE.
Yeah.
Which is now part of that whole huge network.
Right. But I found that I had disequilibrium.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at traceminerals.com. Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to traceminerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.
And France was experimenting with other kinds of weird. We talked about their weird experimental monorail. They had like experimental air cushion trains.
They had those in the Citroëns.
You drove an air cushion Citroën.
No, but the Citroën
floated 8 inches or off the ground. Sorry, 16 centimeters off the ground.
The Citroëns like famously had pneumatic suspension and disc brakes and stuff like that way before anybody else had them.
Yeah,
like they were super modern for their time.
Imagine a time when the world's center, where the U.S. is in such a doldrums and malaise. And, you know, other, you know, East Asia has not emerged yet, that the world's center of science fiction, where the future will come from, futurism, is France.
Yeah.
There was a few years where France was Wakanda.
You're talking about my childhood.
And we have forgotten this.
Because they also had, like nakedness on TV and...
You're exactly the right age for this to be the future. Orange trains and topless ladies in deodorant ads.
Well, and it was, you know, they were sexually progressive in a way that felt kind of modern and like socially modern,
yeah,
sort of smug and a version of integration that at the time felt more modern than American. Although it turned out like was just as problematic.
That didn't take much.
Right.
I mean, listeners are probably wondering, is this compatible with Marxism? And the answer is absolutely.
Yeah, it was.
Like when the TGV was rolled out under Mitterrand, there was the government went to great efforts to not brand it as this is the premium business class thing. Everybody else takes the crap trains. Like, you know, the slogan chosen by the Mitterrand government was progress means nothing unless shared by all. And that was kind of the touchstone of French public life then, that we're all going to move forward together and we're not going to leave a single Frenchman behind.
Wow. I can think of a few Frenchmen that got left behind.
For example.
Turns out it didn't work out.
No. This utopian vision did not last forever. But it lasted long enough for a government report to be produced saying it is possible to add a visual information system to the French telephone lines, which will be huge. This will change every aspect of life. Think about all the little daily things you'll be able to do by interacting with your telephone. And by 1980, the device called the Minitel is being piloted in, I think originally in Brittany, like, you know, a few households in Saint-Malo, and then it expands to larger and larger areas. And it works. In 1982, Minitel goes nationwide. Every household in France can receive, absolutely free of charge, a little beige box with a small keyboard, a black and white computer monitor, and a modem. Now, it doesn't have a CPU. I mean, 1982, Americans were just getting used to the idea that they could get a Commodore 64, you know? And France is saying, you can all be online, on the line. It doesn't have a CPU, so it's like a... You might be like me, old enough to remember these dumb terminals that would just connect to a mainframe and would just feed text to you, and you'd feed text back, and somewhere else a computer is thinking and answering.
Sure. I remember that. My mom, that was how my mom worked.
That's exactly how these worked. It would use your existing phone lines to, I think you would have needed a second line to do voice and Minitel at once, because it's using just kind of standard slow modem handshaking of the time.
Did it make a like beep?
I'm not sure if it made the same connecting noise we associate with modems today, but yes, it's the same technology.
So
it's got a ZERTY keyboard instead of a QWERTY keyboard. That's the main thing, the main difference.
What's weird to me is that I took my first French class in 1980. I was in French in junior high and high school from 80 to 84.
Did you study abroad ever?
I never studied abroad, but we were early adopters of home computing because my mom was a computer programmer. And so we had an IBM PC, the first, you know, generation one home computer. And like very early, as we talked about earlier, a very early modem. And I never heard of Minitel. And it would have seemed like the type of thing they would have. I guess it's just that my French teachers were all old ladies and they were still trying to explain how glamorous it was to ride around on a bicycle with a black beret. And they didn't know about the future.
Their ideas of France came from post-war Paris, like immediately post-war.
Yeah.
It was a slow expansion into French life. Like when Minitel was released, pretty much all it could do was replace the phone book. It became a text directory of addresses and phone numbers.
But how would you search?
With your keyboard.
You could enter in a search term and it would return a result.
Yes.
Oh.
And again, you know, you're having to wait for the light to turn on in your chambre, your query would go over the wires to wherever the server was, and it would return the address of the phone number you're looking for and come back to you.
Uh-huh.
But by the standards of 1982, it was nearly instantaneous, because you would normally have to like page through a big book or call a human operator. And clearly that's not, you know, we've seen 2001. That's not how the future is going to work when you call home from your Pan Am space station.
No, you don't want to talk to a human operator.
No, operators will not be standing by. And from the beginning, it was clear that, you know, the services will expand. Like Western European governments at this time were about nothing if not expanding vast public services to all.
Uh-huh.
And soon, like within a matter of a couple of years, you could check your bank balance and do bank financial transactions on Minitel. You could buy and sell stock. You could see what the weather was. I don't know if you could buy or sell stock. You could see stock prices go up and down. I don't know at what point financial trading was added. You could check the weather forecast. You could book travel tickets, get plane tickets, train tickets. You know, it was all tied into the national education system, so you could apply to university or get results from your exams. And, you know, government agencies were slowly adding access to all their services via the Minitel. So in cases where you would no longer have to find a public office and find the right functionary to hand you the right pamphlet, you would never have to write to Pueblo, Colorado again. Like all the black and white text would just come into your neighborhood. An interesting thing that happened almost right away, so we're still in like 1983, is that newspapers are outraged.
What?
And you can see why. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that, you know, would happen in the rest of the world in the mid to late 90s. Newspapers were like, wait, people buy our thing to find out what the weather's going to be and if their stock went up and this is bad news.
Right.
But in the most French of all French strategies, the government decided we will prop up.
Sure, we'll pay everyone.
We'll prop up the newspapers too. They passed a rule that said you had to be a registered newspaper if you wanted to release content on the Minitel.
Oh, okay.
So newspapers started rolling out 24-hour online news, and this was a game changer because France had internet news basically before it had satellite news. Like in the 1984 LA Olympics, the French would go to bed not knowing if they had won a medal or not, because LA is what, 5-8 hours earlier?
Yeah.
Nine in the summer, maybe. Yeah. And the only way to, you know, instead of waiting for the morning edition, you could stay up and just keep asking Minitel, and it would tell you in real time, you know, Zut alors, the pole vaulter has won the silver medal. So this was a game changer for individual users who were like, whoa, news in real time. I didn't have to wait for a paper.
How cool, except none of it matters. News is garbage, and it was then too.
But in 1984, when the newspaper is still like your lifeline to the world, imagine that shift. I mean, people our age saw it happen in the 90s, but in France, it happened in 1984.
I wonder if there were 20 different people who made money at a betting parlor before the betting parlors realized, hey, wait a minute.
They were doing the thing from the end of the Sting.
Yeah.
But
how did everybody know that horse came in first?
The problem with this bureaucracy is that entrepreneurs very quickly realize that it's very easy to get a newspaper registered by French law.
Oh.
So if you wanted to get, basically, if you wanted to get an app in the App Store, if you wanted to add a service to Minitel, you would have to register a newspaper, print a paper, then apply to move that service to Minitel, do so, and then your paper could fold, and you were good. You were a telecommunications entrepreneur now in perpetuity.
It wasn't even that easy to start a zine.
Right. If you could start a zine about Joy Division, you could be an internet millionaire back then. So very quickly, Minitel sees this whole culture start, you know, the same thing that was happening with US bulletin boards at the time, but nationwide, because everybody gets a free terminal, starts to see this accumulation of weird culture around the internet. Minitel Rose was the name of the genre of sexy chat lines.
What?
You know, the equivalent of what was it here? 900 numbers? What were the? I wouldn't know.
Yeah,
but I'm sure you maxed out your parents' credit cards.
No, I could never suspend disbelief. It's very hard for me to suspend disbelief. You get call up on some 900 number, and she's like, "Hello,"
and you know she's ironing like the
what movie
is that? Is that Altman's Shortcuts where the sexy phone sex lady is changing her baby's diaper or whatever. In this case, it would be text-based. So you would type in, hey,
what are you wearing?
Baby, what are you wearing? And it would just be like a bunch of men and women in call centers just...
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
You don't even need to have a nice sexy voice if you're doing it over Le Minitel.
So there were different channels?
Yeah. I mean, think of it as... I don't know what they would say, features or, you know, today it would be app icons on a screen. Back then you would see a list and it would say, are you interested in financial education? And you click on one of those. Okay, do you want directory assistance? Are you interested in chatting?
News groups.
Yeah. And by well into the, I mean, this basically the France had its first dot-com bubble in the mid-80s because everybody rushed into this space. But there was a lot of growth because, again, millions of people have access to this service and it's free and want to see what the new stuff is. They really got around the chicken and the egg problem that America had, where why would you get on the internet? There's nothing good. And then why would the internet create nothing good? There's nobody on it. You know, France just, the government delivered everyone an egg in the mail. And, you know, a lot of these businesses failed, but I think by the mid 80s, you know, something like a half of the service is just chatting and gaming.
Whoa.
So like the internet forms very quickly. The World Wide Web forms very quickly over this totally different interface.
Whoa.
Like a series of text screens. By the 90s, you've got multiplayer gaming. You can grocery shop for same day delivery. You know, something that I did not start doing until 2020.
Right.
You can actually submit natural language requests like buy theater tickets in Paris. and it'll take you to the menu for that service.
Aren't we all on Minitel? Why didn't it spread it sound around
great?
The world?
Doesn't it sound great? You could actually remotely control home appliances. Like you could set your thermostat from on vacation.
By how?
I mean, you'd have to have a thermostat that was wired to your home's phone service.
Incroyable.
C'est incroyable. And the funny thing is, this is all happening in the mid-90s when you and I are all standing in line at the bank to deposit a check. Ugh,
going to the grocery store like cavemen.
Waiting on hold for hours just to get any government agency to give you any information on your parking ticket or your form for assistance or whatever you submitted.
Completely unable to multiplayer game or
right.
Have sexy talk via text.
Like, we were actually having to have sexy talk with our romantic partners, if you can imagine. Oy. Such an indignity.
Oy. You know, as late as 1997, a friend bought me a pager because they were like, you're impossible to get a hold of. I'm just going to buy you a pager. But I could have been Minitelling the whole time. I mean, that would have required that I have a home.
The home be in France.
Right.
You would have to be Tom Ripley. Well, just murder some American expatriate and take over his fortune.
I'm saying if Minitel had spread around the world, which it surely should have, except for what, Ken, tell us.
There were attempts to get Minitel to spread because France was very proud of its national accomplishment here. Like, it had the internet. It didn't know this, but it was 10 to 15 years ahead of the internet, or the World Wide Web, only within the borders of France. And, you know, in the 90s, they would boast about it. Chirac, here's a quote from Chirac. Today, a baker in Aubervilliers knows perfectly how to check his bank account on the Minitel. Can the same be said of the baker in New York?
No.
And he's right.
He is right.
New York's the financial center of the world, and, you know, maybe like a tenth of 1% of nerds have figured out how to get on CompuServe or Prodigy.
Not a single baker, I bet, among them.
None of them bakers. All of them computer engineers or Defense Department employees.
I feel like it would be really frustrating if you were Belgian or Luxembourgian or right. Swiss.
So right? Close.
It's like, what? How hard is it?
I just want to sneak across the border and use Minitel.
Yeah.
It's such a cool beige box. By this time in the Chirac era, there were 9 million Minitel sets operating in French households, 25 million users using a collection of 26,000 different services. 26,000 companies had registered different services on the website for, again, everything from buying plane tickets to checking weather forecasts.
And it looks like a personal computer, a small one and a kind of primitive-y one, but not any weirder than
The main difference that it's not storing any kind of state or doing any kind of computation is totally opaque from the user.
Yeah, who cares?
You've got input on a keyboard and output on a monitor. It's as if you all have they gave a computer to everybody in France and put it online.
And did you have to know, like basic? I mean, did you have to know command line stuff or special?
No. Like, it was just there. When I was on a dumb terminal in the '90s, yeah, you'd have to learn Linux and C shell scripting, you know, and not at all here. You see, it's like Yahoo, basically. You launch into Yahoo and you've got a list of options and you follow the hierarchy till you get to the services you like. I bet there were ways to shortcut the services you used most.
Wow, I'm looking now. I see a picture of an 8-bit drawing of a naked lady.
On Minitel. I don't think
it's a French thing, of course.
There's, I mean, it's 20 years ago.
Naked
John.
Lady.
That woman's clearly dead by now.
You're doing all the right things, like eating clean and staying active, but nearly all of us are still missing a key piece, minerals. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's not getting, supporting mood, energy, immunity, and nervous system balance. It's made from ionic trace minerals your body actually absorbs and comes in 3 delicious flavors, blue raspberry, blue Hawaiian, and blue acai. Because your body can't make minerals and modern food and water don't supply enough, start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Find it now at TraceMinerals.com.
Well, some of these are really cool. Like the terminals themselves are really modern-looking, space age 2001.
Well, the old-timiness of the terminals was one of the things that doomed Minitel. Oh. You know, once other countries actually embraced the standard of the World Wide Web,
other countries.
The problem is Minitel is a closed system. So, you know, it wasn't possible to expand it or integrate it into a larger worldwide network because the whole thing was running through the French government.
Right.
And also the box, most of the boxes had kind of looked clunky and embarrassing. You know, if you were a tech person, you wanted one of those, was it the iMac that had the big...
The round butt.
The teal, the cyan...
But that was what, 90, when was the iMac? 96, 97?
Yeah, I mean, but that's what happened. Like, like this, the Minitel lasted and thrived as late as 2009. The directory assistance stuff, the phone book equivalent on Minitel, was getting 1 million hits a month.
Whoa. When? 99?
2009.
2009.
Yeah. So, you know, it had a lot of legacy use because people were, that was just part of the same reason you and I use ATMs instead of scanning checks with the app on our phone. You know, we were just kind of plugged into the old way of doing stuff.
So was it that you had a personal computer, but you also were plugged into the Minitel, or were that many people still using Minitel exclusively?
No, you were using a Minitel device. I don't think it ever, I don't know if it ever,
2009.
There must have, I don't know. I think it was still a closed system until it died.
I've been to France about 15 times in that period, and I never saw a Minitel.
I mean, towards the end, you would really apparently only see Minitels in like Airbnbs.
Oh.
Because one of the use cases for it was, this is how we give tourist information.
There were Airbnbs in 2009?
Yeah, or equivalent, you know,
right.
You know, you'd check into a youth hostel or you'd rent a cottage somewhere and it would have a Minitel because that's where you find out what time the train leaves. And
so here's what's crazy. I was in all those youth hostels. I'm sure there were Minitels all around, and it was my sheer lack of curiosity.
You were probably like, this is a crappy computer over here. Like,
what is
check.
That computer? I don't need to look at a computer. I'm a natural man. And I just was oblivious.
You're contributing to the general ignorance of French
of Americans in France. I was the poster child
of
it.
American ignorance about France's Tomorrowland, you know? So as you asked, there were attempts to bring Minitel to the world. There's no reason why it couldn't. On the one, you know, and they piloted it in dozens of countries. On the one hand, it's easy to see why Minitel was doomed. You know, it was, after about 1985, there was no innovation. It was always going to be locked into the same text-based interface. Here are the kinds of services we allow, and here's the kind of stuff you can do.
Was it just...
Nobody was ever like, hey, let's put a graphical interface on top of this.
What was there a technological reason why there was no innovation, or was it just that the people in charge just didn't give a hoot?
That's the problem. Everything was running through the French post office, basically.
Yeah.
So like a small group of kind of old... tenured, what's the equivalent of tenure in government? You know, basically,
sinecure.
Yeah. Sinecured government employees. Basically you had to get through these elderly French bureaucrats
who had been 30 when it was invented and now they were 60.
Yeah. And they don't care. So that's not the kind of environment that generally a lot of innovation comes out of, you know, a government board that doesn't care. And in fact, you know, you see Minitel, the failure of Minitel, if you can call it that, it's a Silicon Valley cliche about innovation done wrong. Yeah, exactly. The dangers of centralization. You know, if you don't have little agile upstarts, if you have some big gloomy government telling you what to do,
anything.
But the funny thing is, we can actually see what happens when Minitel tries to expand to America, because that happened in 1991.
Really?
France Telecom licensed the technology to a service that they called 101 Online that they were going to pilot in the Bay Area. And they thought, this is perfect. We are right now the connectivity capital of the world. 1991 is just ahead of the curve of people starting to know what email is. And, you know, the tech-savvy people are starting to get on Genie and CompuServe, and little area bulletin boards are starting up for hobbyists to yak.
Do they call it connectivity, or is that just a frontier way of pronouncing it?
You're mad that I didn't say connectivity? Connectivity. Like Connecticut?
Connectivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that much more common pronunciation.
Hartford connectivity.
So wait, was online already a word of art, a term of art of 1991?
That's a good question.
Or did they invent online?
No, I mean, America Online existed. I wonder what year we first see online cited. I mean, it's as early as 1950, if you're in a university computer lab, I guess.
Oh, whoa.
That's the first time anyone said the system is online, and that meant
I'm
talking to the computer.
I guess my mom would have said that, yeah.
But, I mean, America Online started up in the 80s. Is that possible? Founded in 83.
Really?
But, I mean, it wasn't renamed America Online until 1989. It was like an IBM user service called PlayNet.
But I remember PlayNet. But even 1989 seems
it's weirdly
early.
Were you aware of this kind of parallel? Like, my dad was enough into hacker culture, and we had enough copies of Byte magazine sitting around that I was aware that there were all these bulletin boards out there where the computer people were talking about hacks and freaks and, you know, sending bitmaps of naked ladies, probably.
Yeah, I knew about it. I subscribed to PC Magazine. But
still?
not still. But, you know, I was... Well, when did I start reading 2600? It was later, but mid-90s. I mean, I knew they were there, but I just didn't have any interest. I read 2600 magazine and enjoyed it without any knowledge of what they were actually doing. Like, I was not interested in getting on a computer. I just was interested in, it's like reading film reviews for a movie you have no intention of seeing.
But so in 1991, San Francisco gets a chance to try 101 online, and France Telecom hires John Cote, who had kind of been the genius, you know, the bulletin board operator who had built a culture around The Well, which was the Bay Area and Silicon Valley local bulletin board, and therefore, you know, probably the forefront of that in the nation. And they sent little Minitel devices to, you know, the editors of all these PC magazines. And this being the Bay Area 1991, they set up little, like, digital chill-out rooms at, like, raves and cool parties.
Sure.
So you could, like, you know, take a break from the
from
dance
grinding
music.
Your teeth.
Exactly. From whatever awful Manchester music you were listening to, and go check out what the mini internet of 101 online had to offer. But you could see the way that it was implemented there and the way it was implemented in France, you can see why it didn't work. Like, the very fact that it had universal adoption first of all, in France, it appeared early enough that there were no competitors.
Right.
And then you got a vast public system with the weight of the government behind it. So, you know, you suddenly have universal adoption.
If you wanted to talk to your friend was there.
Yes. And you don't have to wait to talk your friends into getting online. And there's basically net neutrality in France in the 1980s. Anybody who registers a paper can put a
site.
Yeah. They weren't called
portal
sites. Services, I guess, is what they were called.
Page.
Could add a service to to Minitel. So it's net neutrality, basically. Easy enough to do. There was no gatekeeper curating, here's what can go on here.
Well, how were search returns organized? If you said, I want to make a reservation and there were 10 people offering the service, how would how would it return results?
I think the services might have been proprietary to who you're getting the services from.
Oh.
So, you know whether you're talking to the equivalent of French Rail or the equivalent of Ticketmaster.
You'd go on BNSF or the equivalent
or
whatever.
So.
No, that's Burlington Northern Santa Fe.
Yeah.
BSFN. What is the French Rail? BSFN?
It would be funny if it were Burlington Northern Santa Fe. I mean, that'd be a heck of a channel.
It's SNCF.
What does that even stand for? I mean, something national, something de France.
Yeah, that's what it stands for. Something national.
Or is
something
or it's
France.
Probably Chemin de Fer, right?
Chemin de Fer.
That's what the CF is. That makes sense. But 101 online decided to follow the US model that Prodigy and CompuServe and Genie and all the rest have been doing, which is we curate our material.
Yeah.
You know, we've licensed Reader's Digest and we've licensed World Book Encyclopedia and we've got the DC Comics chat and
trying to get all those 80-year-olds to sign up. Société Nationale de Chemin de Fer Français.
I like how it's a society.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I am a member of the French National Railroad Society. So it was just a different world. Like they were actually, you know, France was doing net neutrality. In a way, the US was doing its own little no, the corporations will run this and they'll do fine. So it's the same battle we see today between even though the French one is a massive government,
a socialist enterprise
effort, and we would like, you know, theoretically we would like to see government out of internet. At least the French one was everybody has it and everybody can put services on it. Whereas the US was like, this big corporation's going to decide which things you can see on its portal.
Well, the new version of that is internet as a utility.
Absolutely.
Right? We're asking the government to step in and say, look, this is too important to be left to private companies.
The internet should be free.
And universal.
Like water. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, you see the same kinds of conversations today around, you know, which companies have too much power over the internet. You know, does Google effectively have a monopoly that keeps me from setting up a site because it's the only way to sell ads and it's the only way to optimize search? You know, does Facebook control every site of a certain kind? You know, at what point do we say Twitter has a monopoly? It's all these same questions. And in the US, the system was so bad that if you wanted to start a service on 101 online, you'd actually have to put your content on a floppy disk, take the files physically to the office in downtown San Francisco.
And wait in line.
Yeah, basically. And have them change it, convert it to their format, and then your service could appear on their site. So it was all the inconveniences of offline life and none of the and few of the advantages, few of the efficiencies. So San Francisco at least had its chance at getting Minitel in 1991. And failed utterly because you needed Mitterrand-style socialism.
Once again, just like San Francisco failed utterly.
Yeah, just like we all do today. San Francisco thought it was on the, you know, thought it was on the forefront of progressivism and really just, you know, wanted to see it low property taxes and
no public transit.
No transit and no homeless people, basically.
I wonder, you know, the French don't play well with others. And there are a lot of European programs and systems that kind of feel designed for the EU as a community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, France always holds itself apart a little bit. And there are a lot of things that the EU adopts and that France doesn't. And there are a lot of things that are proprietary to the French way of thinking that no one else is invited into. Just being in France feels very different. You know, if you could go from Belgium to Spain, it would feel more, they'd feel more akin. But you have to go through France and you feel like you're in a weird other world while you're there.
France and the UK are the same in this respect. And it probably dates back to being a big European power that never got embarrassed in the 20th century. You know, like Germany, Italy, and Spain, you can see why they're not like, you know, no, us uber alles, you know,
same anymore.
Same with Eastern Europe. Yeah. But you know, France
got kind of embarrassed there along the way a couple of times, but they never took it.
It was looking bad at the half.
They never accepted their embarrassment. DNBN few. And they were just like, well, it's fine. It's whatever. We'll hand that off.
That's true.
But I wonder how much that has to do with just the kind of, whether it would have spread if there wasn't that. I mean, the very word chauvinism is a French word.
QED.
Whether the French sort of chauvinism is what kept it not just from being something that they exported, but something that other countries felt like they wanted.
I mean, the Chirac quote is very telling, I think. It's not just like, we have the future and it is our gift to you. It's really like, nobody in New York can do this. Suckers.
Move to France. And that concludes Minitel, entry 791.IS4209, certificate number 23054 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, let us enter it into the record that it was invented in France.
Exactly. I'm sure you guys are using a fully text-based terminal interface with your version of the internet now, and you think our folly with social media was a terrible flirtation that ended the world.
Yeah, you're watching the internet scroll by like a stock ticker, and you're thinking, what a bunch of dummies.
What do you think happened to a million, 9 million Minitel boxes? Are French dumps just full of them, or like, is the future going to recover them and set them back up?
I'm sure there's an internet cafe somewhere in Paris that has, that is decorated with like 500 Minitel terminals.
Yeah.
And I bet it's really cool. Please send us a picture of it to @OmnibusProject or @KenJennings, @JohnRoderick. You can email that picture to us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can mail us a Polaroid. You can mail us a Minitel terminal.
Yeah. Are we allowed to have them? Are they all still the property of Francois Mitterrand?
I wonder if you can like reverse engineer them and make them into some cool little art thing.
Like people who put cell phones into rotary phone cases?
Well, that, or, you know, I actually have my original IBM PC and my first Mac Classic too. And I keep thinking I'm going to turn them on, hook them up, and then have that flashing cathode ray thing and just have them in the living room, like, I don't know, figure out a way to have old Ren and Stimpy cartoons play on them or something.
Maybe make it a planter.
I wish I lived in a loft still. That's all weird to do in a house. Yeah, but if I lived in a loft.
If you had exposed brick, you could have an old broken Donkey Kong Jr. machine.
I could.
Why not?
I could. I'd have a whole wall of Minitel terminals.
Nobody's stopping you.
Like some early 90s hacker movie.
I think we're speaking to like a Station 11 type future where people are either planting vegetables in old Minitels or actually accessing the new global satellite network on them.
Mm-hmm. Hacking in. So send us your Minitel to P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155. You can share photos. If you don't want to just send them to us, if you want to share them with like-minded futurelings, you can go on the internet and find fan groups under the name Futurelings. If this was a Minitel universe, the Futurelings site would be...
You'd have to start a newspaper called Le Futureling.
Le Futureling.
And then from that, you could get an app.
And you can support the show, and we appreciate your support. It will help us turn the future into a Minitel-based society.
Now that France is no longer the future, and the U.S. certainly is not, I don't even know what to hope for.
Its omnibus bunker is the future.
Cascadia, baby.
Yeah, that's right. We are your future government. Support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject to help us overthrow the current fractured governments of the world and establish one world government under Ken and me.
It'll be benevolent, France, Mitterrand-style social democracy. That's our vow to you.
You can trust us. Any of my really bad ideas, Ken will check with his, sort of good, stolid...
We'll just check them all with a massive bureaucracy.
right. And Ken's tendency to be autocratic, I'll mess up by being...
With your anarchic spirit.
Like every kind of third proposal will be so kooky that it'll throw him off his game.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe that we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.